Have your weekend breakfast
with Refilwe and Mbakanyane on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
And as we do every Sunday, we talk to our clinical psychologist at Corsigiane. Today we're exploring an interesting study that shows or contends that extroverts may generally spend more time with others, but this study finds that introverts are actually better at understanding people in general. Yale researchers found that introverts were better at answering questions about human behaviors in comparison to extroverts. There's some theories around that, but let's get into that with Corsi Gianni. Good morning, Corsi.
A spinner, it is.
Yes, absolutely. Corsi, sure. The vindication of introverts such as myself, the guys who get to a party and just, you know, prop up the wall because, my goodness, talking to strangers, so scary. Yeah. I do feel vindicated. This introvert thing, or this thing of being an introvert, is seemingly a bit of a superpower as well.
True. I think these things, there's always a gift and burden in assessments, right? So on the one hand, while it helps for us to be able to unpack and give some sort of label, some sort of category, some sort of, bracket of understanding to things, when we do then reify them, it then becomes a problem as well. So I think what it does speak to is perhaps that we are kind of looking at the other side of the coin, where it's seeking to balance what has been lauded, has been lauded as the way of being, and it's now seeking to balance. But the problem is, if it takes a polarized view of these ways of being, that's equally problematic.
Mm. So, Corsi, one of the a co-author of the study says that part of the reason that introverts are able to better answer questions around human behavior compared to extroverts is that, he contends, it could be that the melancholic introverted people are spending more time observing human nature than those who are busy interacting with others, or they're more accurate at introspection because they have fewer motivational biases. Either way, though, this demonstrates an unappreciated strength of introverts. Yeah. Now, I was on board, but I wonder if, throwing in the word or the descriptor melancholic for introverted people was even necessary. I mean, are introverts always, does being an introvert mean you are melancholic? Does it mean there's a tinge of sort of sadness to all of this? Or does it simply mean, this is how I do me, is to be, alone, read, do my own thing in solitary activity versus other people getting their kicks, in crowds.
Sure. So again, this is the thing about narratives, the meanings of words and things, right? Mm. So I guess what they're talking about is that they're more considered in their way of engagement than extroverts are. Because essentially, the difference between the two is literally that, introverts are marked by an interiority of being. And hence, I guess, borrowing from the word melancholia, it's not necessarily that it is so. But that's what they are referencing in that. Because, they're talking about the fact that introverts take time to observe. They chew on things, they mull over, they digest, they process, they observe, they listen before they are able to express. And therefore, they are more likely than extroverts to identify, read and attune to finer nuances of people and behavior than perhaps and the fine print of things, right, than extroverts who are marked by exteriority. And the way I always define extroverts, some of us being some of those, is that extroverts think with our mouths open.
Mm. Absolutely.
Right? So therefore, we use up a lot of airtime and data bundles while we are thinking about things, whereas the default place of introverts is is the interior. You know, they are very comfortable in the privacy of their own thoughts, in the company of their inner world before they, you know, they pronounce on things.
Yeah.
Whereas for that, to go for things.
Yeah. So,
and they will process later after they've said it. They will process later and come like, oh, yeah, actually.
after a few incidents of, you know, foot
exactly.
in mouth.
After you put your foot in the mouth, because, you know, things will bypass the brain and shoot out of your mouth without your permission many a time.
Yeah.
And you haven't even been, you know, aware that they've left the mouth.
Kosi, I wonder if this ability, this purported ability to understand human behavior more, what that means about one's interiority. If an introvert has had more time to think about their own actions, to examine themselves more, perhaps go round and round in circles more and not quite reach any conclusions. If an introvert has had the opportunity to do that more, and that somehow allows them deeper insight into the human condition at large, what does that say about us? Because we are told we're all unique, and we believe that. I'd like to believe that.
So it says we have our own, perhaps unique and some more common ways through which we enter the space, the world, and engage and process things. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is not an either or that if you are this, you're only that. It's just saying that is the predominant way of being.
Mm-hmm.
And the tendency, of course, as human beings is we become creatures of habit. So if this is your default place, it becomes your place of comfort, right? So, and the disadvantage of that, for example, becomes the fact that even as an introvert, because interiority is your place of comfort, it takes concerted effort to come out and be expressive when you need to. And hence, you know, there's been that leaning towards extroverts because they are immediate, they are available. You know, they're able to give you their thoughts and opinions and so on immediately. And therefore, you can access them more readily than you can introverts.
Mm, mm.
But it does not suggest that one is better than the other.
Yeah.
How? It just says in certain situations, what is required.
Well, speaking of certain situations, you know, other studies have shown that introverts tend to outperform extroverts in a crisis. What is happening there, do you think, when it comes to crisis, the need to pull, zoom out, be less interior and deal with, you know, something urgent?
So what it is pointing to is the fact that introverts are less, let's call it, field dependent. So in other words, they can insulate themselves in a crisis and therefore are more steady in how they would deal with that crisis. Whereas perhaps extroverts are more likely to be thrown and prone to panic in situations. Introverts are more likely to kind of insulate themselves and therefore be steady and calmer and more reasoned in how they then respond to that crisis.
Uh-huh.
Extroverts are more likely to be triggered and panicked.
So a superpower right there, as opposed to being an extrovert and being upepa laga July, you know, just flying in the wind, being buffeted about.
Yeah.
This is me now taking pot shots at you. Why do
You're
I do
right.
this, Kosi?
We can take you. We understand you.
So, you know, Kosi, I think in many ways, what we're essentially having a conversation about is that balancing act of how to bring certain aspects of your personality, your skills, your capabilities to bear when they are needed. Because, you know, when we're sitting with someone whose introversion is crippling, whose shyness is crippling, is the thought of speaking up in a room full of colleagues or, you know, strangers, it's, you know, just they can't countenance it. That's the other end of the spectrum. But in many ways, we're always working to improve ourselves and to fix somehow, right? Sure. That fine-tuning process that we're always busy with as human beings, how should we undertake that? Because it would seem, you know, in a lot of the sort of back and forth, we're usually not happy with small changes, small adjustments. You want to be an extrovert. You want to be more careful and mindful of your words, as opposed to, I don't know, developing a knack for saying, yeah, I said it. I said what I said and I meant it. You know, we're never quite happy with where we are.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, it's not an either or. So if we're talking about, you know, the point you're alluding to now is about, so the fact is that these are our default, let's say our default inclinations, right? And what we're talking about when we're talking about personal growth and personal transformation, it is about the fact that if your inclination is more towards one than the other, it then means that as human beings, we tend to become like a knife. We can be very sharp on the one end as an extrovert or an introvert. That's your space. That's your place of comfort. But like a knife, a knife is useless on the other side. It only works on the one side. So what personal growth is about as human beings is about us learning to evolve from being a knife into a sword. You know, again, it's about that discernment.
Listen to you spitting gems on a Sunday morning. I like that. Carry on.
Yep. So it is about that discernment of under what circumstance is what quality of me called upon. And so it is about recognizing, first of all, you can't change what you don't see. Mm. It is about recognizing what your inclination is and thereby being able to see what's the blunt side of that, and therefore what are the qualities that I need to develop in myself. So as an extrovert, I have to learn to think with my mouth shut. That's the growth for me. And if you think about it in relationships, there's an interesting dynamic that we tend to be partnered with people who are the opposite.
Which is cute at the beginning and then is riles you up a few years in.
Yeah, but exactly. But if you think about, imagine what happens in a relationship where there are two introverts.
Sure.
The carpet is thick with silence, right? The unsaid, right? Whereas if you think about two extroverts in a relationship, the question becomes, who is going to listen? Because the inclination is both of them talk. Mm. So what we are in that sense is that we are each other's gifts. We are each other's mirrors that says, here is the shadow, or here is the blunt side of you that needs to be sharpened. So here I am to you as a gift for that other side of you that you are not inclined to go to. But of course, as you rightfully say, our tendency is things would be so much better if you were just like me. You know, we would talk about things now and resolve them and move on.
Yeah.
and introvert is squirming and saying, this is not a matter of life and death. Can I just breathe? Mm. And they retreat into their shell. And of course, then the dynamic becomes when the introvert feels threatened by the exuberance of the extrovert, they withdraw into the shell. Which frustrates the extrovert who goes for them and tries to drag them out and they withdraw even more. In the end, a lot of energy spent, nobody is the happier for it.
Yeah. So it's about knowing yourself and knowing the other person, especially in relationships. Well, Khosi, speaking of knowing the other person, there's that small matter, very tiny matter of parenting and raising an introvert. And so quite often what happens is, as a child, you're told to just stop being so shy. You know, your shyness is treated as a problem, something to be fixed, something in some households that is an act, you know, that is really just, you know, you're being rude because, you know, why don't you speak up when I've got visitors or there are visitors at the house? Why don't you engage better when an adult asks you A, B, C, D? How do we think about, or how do you think we should deal with or think about children who are shy So
yeah,
in all of this, we've had a conversation about adults who look at themselves, understand what their strong suits are, understand how to become a sword versus that knife, sharp on the one side but blunt on the other. But how do we then raise a shy child who is ultimately confident?
Yeah. So the opposite, to finish off what you started, the opposite is equally true, where some of us have been told since childhood, I cannot tell you the number of times, and my mother would tell you how many times she would say, Kosi, can you just keep quiet?
Yeah.
Can you just keep quiet until I tell you to talk?
You talk too much and you ask too many questions.
Aha, exactly. And at that point, I'll say to her, can I tell you one last thing, then I'll keep quiet. Yeah, and so it's both sides. And I guess the responsibility of parenting is to be the knower, the seer, who recognizes, the child that you are gifted with, who is some sort of a combination of the parenting pair, right? So so it is about honoring that's who that child is, and that's how they are wired.
Yes.
Right? And to then see the challenges that this presents for the child. And it is about inviting that child to play. In other words, to give them the opportunity to talk more. And this actually carries on into the world of work, because what then happens is, in this fast pace, extroverts are ready to give their opinions and things are moving. And it's the same thing as in parenting, as in leadership, is about being able to read the nuances of conversation, to be able to stop the conversation at some point and ask a receiver for their opinion, because a Kosi will have talked comfortably so and immediately so. It is about recognizing that there is value in the silence, and that there are those people that need to be seen for who they are and invited to give their opinions, because otherwise you will lose out on the gift that they have to contribute to the situation, because you will run with the extroverts who are immediately available and doesn't necessarily mean qualitatively better off than the introvert.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, Kosi, I think, you know, staying with parenting for just a little while longer, the idea of holding and affirming your child and whatever that personality is or that way of being in the world is, just talk to us about the importance of that, because it seems to me for you being told, yo, Kosi, can you just slow down? Or just two minutes of silence, and you saying, okay, I will. Let me just ask one final question. For you, that wasn't, it didn't douse your fire. It didn't have an extinguishing effect, right?
Yeah.
And people and children are resilient, some more than others. But where, and I don't want to call it damage, but where, yeah, I guess that's the word I'll use for now, where damage is done, what have you fundamentally said to this little person by saying, whatever or however you are, I can't handle it, or it doesn't suit me, or I don't like it.
Yes. So what it then has, and especially more so in children, because they are much more susceptible at that age, they are like a chamois. You know, they will hold on. Things get imprinted into the psyche. And because this is how we get to know who we are in the world, by how significant others in our lives treat us. Those are parents, the family, and teachers. Teacher so-and-so said this than the other, and which is why it is so much more important that people in those positions be so conscious of the impact that they can have in children, so they can make or break children. And it is about hearing the child's voice, even in their silence. So to ask them what they are thinking in that moment, how they are feeling in that moment. Because what we're saying in saying so is you're writing into them the sense of being good enough, which is what we're all asking for. It's not about being perfect, but it's about being good enough. And when they do volunteer a thought, a suggestion, a comment or anything, to validate that, to appreciate that they have done so, because it is saying it is okay, but equally so to say, if you don't feel like contributing at this point in time, I also hear that. Mm. There's room for that too.
And also, how do we acknowledge what's also going on with a parent or a guardian in that scenario, right? And I'll make my own, I know my child is not listening, so I'll make my own little confession here.
Yeah.
She was much younger, and I mean, she was very active, but she was much younger and they'd play tennis. Was it tennis or netball at school? And I'd ask her how school was, and she'd say, I just sat with, one of my friends under the tree, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, why didn't you play netball? And she's like, oh, it was so hot. Or ask her, why didn't you enjoy it? It's so hot and it makes me sweat. And I mean, like, of course it makes you sweat. It's physical activity. But what was happening with me, the irritation was, I was like, I've always been incredibly physically active in sport, sporty as a kid.
Yeah.
Just the idea that, my child would not, seemingly be just out there and, just...
Yeah.
Goal defending, yeah. Wing attacking, yeah. Just like yeah. Shutting down the opposition.
Yeah.
What in the world yeah. is happening? But there's a lot of that, your own weird expectations,
sure.
unmet needs or aspirations,
yeah.
vicarious,
yeah.
that are also going
Absolutely.
On there. So sometimes it's
Absolutely.
Quite often not even about, this young person and our expectations or our displeasure at their shyness or them being so loud and extroverted. A lot of it is just located inside you, the parent. What is going
Absolutely.
On with you?
Yep. And of course, therein sits the words, these possessive pronouns of my child.
Oh, but she is mine. All mine.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. And the prophet reminds us that though they come through you, they do not come from you.
Mm.
Right? And it is about that, recognizing that difference, that they are their own persons. And ideally, the parental ego wants them to be mini-me, to emulate everything that I have been, which was reinforced and applauded, but to also compensate for all the things that I wasn't, to be the perfect version of who I wasn't myself,
yeah.
right? And therein is about the need for conscious parenting, right? And to see them as human beings in their own being, which is, these concepts are easier said than done in the moment, right?
Sure.
And it is humbling. And I always say children have a responsibility to disappoint their parents. And I say this from a very positive place.
Yeah.
Right? They have a responsibility to disappoint their parents because the parental ego gets very big, this mini-me-izing of children, right? That they're there to teach you that they are their own persons, here to live out their own destiny.
Well, I'll tell you what,
as a custodian.
If your parental ego even survives to age 10, then you are a strong, strong human being. Listen, if it survives the terrible twos.
Because at that age, they don't care, right? They'll
yeah.
tell you. They'll put you in your place. They don't need to be considered as much.
Yeah. Oh, Kosi, I think we've taken this conversation right along the range of where it could go. But thank you so much for your insights, as per usual. I think a vote of thanks from one of our listeners, don't have a name, but saying, speaking of spilling gems, while Kosi is herself a gem. Thank you, Kosi. This talk has given me insight into myself and members of my family. So thank you for your time, Kosi. All right. We will chat with clinical psychologist Kosi Giane next week, Sunday. If there's a specific matter you'd like us to cover with Kosi, I will be more than happy to pass that along to her. Drop me a mail, refilwe@702.co.za.